Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with another week's look at the world of non-league. And we go deep into non-league this week as well. Unfortunately, I'm on my own this week. No power of the internet supplying us with Mr. Dave Anderson. In the current climate, he's busier than ever. I don't know whether that's work or a golf course or looking for Peronis on his 6 mile walk. But hopefully, Dave Anderson back with us again next week. In the meantime, two guests are one well known to the show, one making his debut to the Non League show, and of course, David Richardson from the Non League paper, giving us a roundup of the week's news and what we can expect to read in this weekend's Non League paper. Don't forget, you can get that on digital subscription if you can't get out to your local newsagent to pick up your own copy. So without further ado, let's get matters underway. So in recent weeks, we've spoken to managers about how they're surviving lockdown. So what about a man at the top? Well, probably he's also the man at the bottom as well, because this is a man that's all about his non-league club. A man who for some, I believe 66 years, has pretty much been a one-club man, like his father before him and his sons alongside. He is Mr. Royden FC. Who, I hear you cry? Well, this is a tale of non-league. Royden FC, currently in the Essex Olympian Division 4, which, by my reckoning, puts them at step 11 of the non-league pyramid. That matters not, because that is where we need to be looking at for this country as we look in the current crisis as to how we can keep football going and where the heart of football is and should continue to be. To tell us more, welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Chairman at Royden FC, Alan Banks.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction. I'm actually not been here for 55 years. I've been here. I started when I was 14, so just the 55 years.
So you're a late starter then, yeah?
But always enjoyed the football there.
So 55 years involved with one club. Yeah, what's kept you there?
Well, I was born in the village. As you've said, my father was involved with the club, and I played from the age of 14 until I was in my 40s regularly. And then I felt that the club was due something. I had to stick around to help the club keep going, and have enjoyed nearly all of it. And it's been very interesting and very challenging.
Well, it's a common theme as well, running through people that are involved with non-league football, that once they're there, they feel they can't walk away. And that's pretty much, in the current situation that we are in this country, that's we need some more of that, don't we? Because the non-league clubs are so important to local communities, people people in general. And they're going to need as much help as anybody else when things get back to this near normal.
Well, that's the point. Yes, we wait to see what the near normal is going to be. I mean, that's the thing that I worry about at the moment, exactly when we would be allowed to play. It's going to be an interesting conundrum for the Essex FA, our league, the Essex Olympian League, who I think do a fantastic job, terrific league, very, very helpful, being very helpful. I mean, I think, along with most of the clubs at our level, we run hand to mouth. But this year, because we've cut off early, a lot of our money comes from collecting subs from players. And obviously, we've got a whole host of games that haven't been played. So we've got no subs for those, but we've got all the expenditure. Mm. So we've had to pay for our pavilion and field and all the insurances and all the signing on things that you have to pay for. So they're all there paid for. So we're running slightly short, but not scandalously. So we have enough to continue, and the league and the Essex FA are helping us by the league are not asking for any of their monies for next year. We don't have to pay to join. They're covering that for us for all the teams. So it does give us a good chance to play next year, but when we will play, I'm not certain.
And that's an important thing, a point that you made there, that you're a club that's in the football pyramid, in the non-league pyramid, step 11, but there's steps below you as well. And this is the important part of English football. But you still collect subs off of players rather than further up the pyramid, where people seem to be focused on the top five levels maybe of the pyramid, and think that that's the only non-league game that's going on. But at the moment they're saying that they might not be able to afford to keep running because they've got costs, they've got overheads. You've got all those pretty much at the similar overheads, apart from the players' wages to pay as well, and probably a lot less potential revenue streams going forward.
Yeah. As I say, I think like most of the teams at our level, we collect off of players. They pay a signing on fee. They pay subs to play the game, which pays for the referees, it covers us for the season, and you go in each season recognising that you're going to collect X amount of money. You know what your expenditure is going to be. This year has been difficult because we've come up short in some of the monies, but it's, I think most clubs are in exactly the same position, and we run from season to season and just about keep our heads above water.
And
it's enjoyable.
It is enjoyable, but in the current climate, you strike me as the man. You've been involved there 55 years, and it's an important thing to you, your football club. You strike me as you're not the sort of person that's probably been sat on his backside for the last 7 weeks. I guess it's a busy time for anybody involved in a football club, but even under current restrictions.
Well, yeah, there's not much we can do because the league was cancelled. Other than keeping in touch through the Essex FA and the league, because the league are sending out information for us to have the AGM online. So we'll be doing that online this year. But there's not too much else that I can do. I've done the accounts and looked at the accounts. I have my people, I say my people, I have someone in the village, because I don't actually live in a village now. And I have someone in the village goes up and checks the pitch is all okay and everything around it's okay. So when we are ready to go, we know we can go. But there's not a lot else that we can do other than keep players involved and, you know, they're really doing that themselves.
Yeah.
I tend to stay out of the WhatsApp groups and everything, and I find that all too much. So I just keep in touch through the managers.
But I'd imagine then you must be finding it quite hard, because I sense from what I've learnt about you that you're hands-on. If something needs doing, you're the man that gets it done normally. And I've even been told that you're in, you know, your more mature years, but I've even seen a photograph from a couple of seasons back where you were stripped and ready to even play for the side when there were a couple of players running late.
Yes, yeah, I'm 70 years old, but this season I wasn't going to sign on, but I did sign on just in case. But it's interesting because we have had quite a change of players. And we had last year, we had a game and I was ready to come on, and most of the team didn't really, had never seen me play. And they were concerned for me and they stopped me coming on. So the guy that got injured just carried playing on. But I figure for 5 minutes I can kick a ball. And I have done a few times.
And I'm sure you're looking forward to doing that again soon as well. I would have thought, but on the back of the season that never was, I guess effectively, it sort of came as a bad time for you guys as well, because looking at the table, which has now been obliterated from all records. For me trying to search again this week, but I think you were top of the table, weren't you? Played 15.
We were top of the table. We were several points clear with a lot of games in hand. We hadn't lost a game in the league. We were still doing well in the Senior Cup. We'd had a couple of Premier Division scalps. The team was going extremely well. Yes, it was. We haven't had a season like that for several seasons, so it was extremely disappointing. Very disappointing for the manager, very disappointing for the players that they couldn't see it through to the end.
Disappointing, but I also sense that you understand the much wider picture of the world and the situation we're in. But nonetheless, I'm sure you're like the rest of us, that you'd like to get back to playing football or watching some football as soon as possible. But I think you've already touched on it, that at your level of the game and many levels of the non-league game, if not all levels of the non-league game, that might not be possible for months, even this side of this year.
No. I mean, that's the problem. Basically, looking at what the government are saying and their scientific advisors, it's difficult to see how us as a contact sport and the way that basically it's parts of, we're all across Essex. So you're traveling all around Essex. So you've got a group of people, minimum 13, 14 players. And then you've got the manager. And if you have some support, you have those traveling around Essex. I can't, unless we get full clearance, I would say it's going to be very difficult to get the league going. The league obviously believe they can get going. They say they're having their AGM in June, as we would normally do, but obviously they don't know when we will be able to start. And it is going to be difficult. I think that's true all the way. If you like, one of the few exceptions of the Premier Division, they can actually have the testing and do all the things that will help secure them and ensure that they, well, mostly avoid any problems. I can't see, even at any level, where it's going to be easy for teams to get going again, let alone at our level.
Well, indeed, I think we're hearing things about the Premier League and about how they could get back underway, and the medical teams behind them, the testing, the cleaning facilities behind them. And there's someone like you that's got a first team, there's youth football around as well. And I don't mean this to come the wrong way, but you're left with just a hose pipe and a set of change rooms, and you've got to work from there. And realistically, the future of football at your level is going to be a long way in the future and very different when we do get to restart.
Yes, it is. I mean, it's difficult to actually understand what we may be asked to do when we are able to play. I mean, if we're not all the way through it, if we haven't got a vaccine, if we've got a vaccine, there's massive change for everyone, and it's almost like you can revert to as we've always been. I do believe that they're setting us up for the fact that there's no guarantees for a vaccine. So it's going to be a continuation of trying to keep it managed and under control. And within our game, I don't see how we can do that easily.
And you said that although you've suffered by not having that income, that the club's safe in terms of short-term future, certainly. But yes. What about if if we don't have a season next year? You might be in a good position, but there must be other clubs around you, in your division, in other divisions, even higher up divisions, that probably this could be the end of them.
I think our level, Royden's level, I think we can survive. Basically, we don't have too much overheads. I think there are, I would have to say, better organised clubs and bigger clubs at our level that probably there are going to be cost implications to them. But at our level, I think we can just get going with the little seed change that we have, and we can carry on when we can carry on. I think the other problem is what I find is, again, at our level, the players that are best service are the older players, the more experienced players. They've been around, they've done it, they're reliable, they turn up when you want them to. But some of the youngsters, they have so many choices that they'll play 1 week, then they'll have a week off. That would have never happened. You know, when I played, you played every week. There was, unless someone broke their leg or something, you're going to play every week, and everyone did. Now, I think it's difficult to get that level of commitment. And what I find with our club is the most committed players are the older players, the players that are coming probably towards the end of their career, and they just want to play, and they're reliable. But the youngsters, not quite the same level of commitment.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly sounds like you've given more than your quota of commitment to Royden. Obviously, one of the reasons I want to get you on is because we do have listeners that love the grassroots game and love non-league, love football, love clubs, and they're always looking for a second, a third or a fourth club to sort of follow. So if they were to maybe pick Royden as a club to keep an eye out for when football does get back underway, what's the unique selling point of Royden? Why should they support Royden and get your backing?
Right. It's a wonderful village club, although we have quite a lot of villagers playing it, but they're not all from the village. We have to supplement them with outsiders. It's a very good ground to come to see. I'm not certain there's a slope on the pitch, but the actual grounds and the pavilion are really good. It's a wonderful setting to come. I'd always recommend if you're coming to watch us, come and watch us at the beginning of the season or the end of the season. In the middle of the season, our pitch gets very heavy and it's not quite such a good game. But beginning of the season, end of the season, you can watch some very good football played in very good spirit. And the quality I've always found is very good in our league. And although we were down in the fourth division, the quality of our players last year was excellent. You would see really good, fast attacking football, and I find it a pleasure. And there are a few followers that come up every week to watch us, and they always seem to enjoy it. It is a very pleasant experience, and they will watch some very good football.
And hopefully, that will be in the not too far distant future. But Alan, I've been grateful for you coming on the Non-League Football Show to show the insight into exactly, you know, non-league football goes beyond just the National League, and it goes beyond the Isthmian League, goes beyond the Southern League, goes beyond the Northern Premier League and the feeder leagues below that as well. And it is so important both to community and to football as a whole that we can get football back up and running safely as soon as possible. And we're grateful that you're involved and that you'll be able to keep football going in Royden and the wider community hopefully very soon.
I hope so. I do very much hope so. It'll allow me to get outside and look forward to it. It is the highlight of my week. I do love going to the game. I've loved it as a player, and I've loved it watching the lads play. Very enjoyable.
Now, there's something in my body clock that still can't quite get used to the fact that it's the end of the football season. We've had no football to watch for so many months. My body still seems to think it's March. It might be sunny. It might be a lovely weather out there. It might be another bank holiday. But I still can't get to grips with it. But one thing I do know is that this weekend would have been the FA Cup final. And I'm sure our next guest, old friend of the show, at FA Cup Fat Foul, Mr. Filanetsa, it would have been looking forward to this as the pinnacle of his season. Now, how are you, Phil? And how are you coping with the fact that there's no FA Cup final this weekend?
No, I'm very, very well indeed, thank you. Well, the sun's shining, which is what we always have when the Cup final comes around. It does seem a bit odd that it's not actually happening. I'm hearing stories that it will be happening. They're still planning to make it happen, but not until early August, which will be interesting because the date, I think the 8th of August, they've earmarked for it, is when I think the extra Premier round for next season would be scheduled to start. So that would be quite an interesting weekend for someone like me who loves both ends of the FA Cup competition.
Yeah, it's a certainly, you know, I'm with you in the traditionalist corner and, you know, wanting, you know, FA Cup finals on Saturdays at the end of the season, the final game, the finale, the 3 p.m. kickoff, the big build-up, where sat at home with a bowl of peanuts and all the family round. And, you know, that's what the FA Cup used to be. And it sort of moved away, a long way from that. And now, as you say, you know, things have been taken out of the FA's hands, certainly on this one. But the traditions of the FA Cup, well, they're really up in the air. But one of the traditions of the FA Cup, a more recent tradition, but you know, I'd hold you up there, Phil, is your love of the FA Cup. And in recent weeks, you've been on your blog, you've had this new strand, FA Cup Memories, and it's been fantastic looking at people throughout the game reminiscing about their love for the FA Cup competition. How did it come about? And tell us a bit more about it, Phil.
Well, yeah, it came about because I saw actually on someone else did a blog of interviewing people about another topic altogether. And I thought, well, that sounds like a good idea. And missing the FA Cup as I thought this would be a good idea to keep the FA Cup fresh in people's minds. Bit of a lockdown project. Decided to get in touch with a few people, not knowing what kind of response I would get. And I've been quite overwhelmed by the actual response from all sectors of the football world. It all kicked off with John Murray back on the 1st of May. And he very kindly was happy to share his memories. And the good thing from him and from everyone who has shared their memories is that they've all been very personal to the person writing the memories, and it's really shown how much love there is for the FA Cup out there. Yeah, people of a certain generation, we all love those 3 p.m. kickoffs and the build-ups that used to happen during the whole Saturday. But even those who are from the later times, their love for the FA Cup is the same, and they've got different kind of memories and different kind of traditions, and it's fantastic to read them all.
Yeah, I think it is one of those things that means something to almost anybody at any level of football, whatever their interest is in football. Because at some point, even if you just play for your school team, you've probably sat down with your mates or with your family and watched the FA Cup final. Because it's a big, it's a bonding thing as well as a spectacle of football.
Yeah, it is. And people have often fallen in love with football through the FA Cup, particularly those that grew up in the 70s and early 80s watching it on TV. That was the only time they ever got to see live football from the domestic game. So there was a big connection there between, you know, their love of the game and the love of the competition. I mean, one of the things that was quite interesting was when Chris Waddle's favourite FA Cup memory, I thought, you know, he'd already stated that he had watched an FA Cup final and that had made him want to play in an FA Cup final, a dream which he achieved on two occasions. But I know he didn't win it, but despite that, you'd still expect that experience to trump his favourite memory of watching Sunderland beat Leeds in the 1973 Cup final.
Yeah, I think that's where this new column has been so fantastic in the current climate as well, because I think everybody during lockdown has sat down and had a bit more time on their hands to reflect on their lives, where they're heading, where they are now, and the future, what this near new normal is going to be. And I think it really has captured the spirit of that thinking and understanding at the moment.
Well, it definitely has, and part of the questionnaire was to ask people their thoughts on what they saw for the future of the competition. And whilst there might not necessarily be total agreement from everyone, one thing that is constant is that everybody wants the FA Cup to be around and to be a pinnacle of the football season. And they have different ideas on how that might work, but not one of them is saying that it should disappear. And I think that's true across the generations. I think. The FA Cup has that ability, even though it's a bit cliched, the magic of the FA Cup, it still has that ability to transfix people when they're watching the game.
Yeah, we've just spoken to the chairman, Alan Banks, at Royden FC. They're step 11 of the non-league pyramid, so they're even below being even considered for entry into the FA Cup. But he was talking about the importance of football and how much it plays a role in people's life. They don't really understand the role that it plays, but it not being there is a big loss.
Yeah, I think there's a quote, and forgive me for getting it wrong, but somebody said that football is the most important thing of the unimportant things. And that's where it sits. It's like, if you're involved in a game, as many of us are, at one degree or another, you can't help but let it be your life. And if it's your life, you need to be passionate about it, and those two things go together.
Yeah, and one of the things I was talking to Alan about is the fact that, you know, being realistic, then it may be a possibility that at non-league level, we won't or can't have a football season next season, or the 2020-2021 season might not be able to take place. But we do know from, you know, that might just be because of the sheer scale of things, that there may be a possibility that a cup competition could take place. So it could almost be that the FA Cup suddenly takes even more priority and prominence than ever before, because that could be the competition that holds football together.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's different situation and circumstances, but following World War II, there was a similar situation whereby they were struggling to get football going again. Everyone was keen to make it happen. What they did was the FA Cup became the prominent competition, and other competitions sort of had to wait for a year before they started. So temporary league competitions and regional competitions took place to get people fit and to keep interest in the game. But the FA Cup took centre stage. Now, I know back in the 1940s, it probably had a much higher regard across the game. But I think, yeah, you're right, there's a possibility that a cup competition that involves everybody, given a chance to get involved and to get themselves back playing football again. And the FA Cup is perfectly suited for that.
Yeah, the FA Cup really is the most important, well, sporting competition. And I know I'm saying this from an Englishman's perspective, but I think as a sporting competition, it's the one that people around the globe look towards and look for results. And it would almost, if it weren't to happen, it would. The government are talking about the morale and the knock-on of not having sport to the mental health of the country. But I think not having the FA Cup would have a similar impact across the world.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it has high regard across the world. You often hear players who come from foreign climes come play in England. If they get to the FA Cup final, they say it's like a dream come true. I very much doubt that English people playing abroad say the same about cup finals over there. But, you know, what shape will it take? You know, FA Cup with no crowds, is it still the FA Cup? FA Cup where you don't allow all the smaller teams to participate because you physically can't get them to be involved, is that the same competition? So it's a tough one. Yeah, the FA Cup is coming up to its 150th anniversary, and I think that will be a great time for it to re-promote itself and to be at the focus of world football. But this interim time is going to be very difficult, and they need to work very hard to keep the FA Cup in a high enough regard that people want it to continue, even beyond its 150th year.
Yeah, while I got you on, Phil, I was going to ask you whether you'd seen the Netflix series. People are watching as much football as possible, and that includes a drama. The drama by Julian Fellowes called The English Game, which is about the FA Cup changing, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great TV series for entertainment purposes. It wasn't very good if you wanted historical accuracy. The way I described it, and I probably won't get this right either, but I said it'd be like showing the Man United treble winning season and claiming that Sean Gota was the key principal in making all that happen. i.e. he never played for Man United, and he never won any of those trophies in the time period that was described. But it was a great show. It was well done. It was entertaining. I just wish that they had either made it more historically accurate or did their best to tell people that this was based on fact but not actually fact. And it just seemed a bit of a mystery and a bit of a strange thing. But well, I enjoyed it, and I know lots of other people have fun too.
Well, I know people probably think this is one of my stock phrases, but I do like to refer to the potential, Hollywood potential of the non-league game. And if there are any Hollywood producers out there listening about, maybe doing something about non-league and the FA Cup, then I definitely recommend Mr. Phil Annetts as your historical accuracy man and for your FA Cup consultant there, because there's a man that knows almost everything that there is needed to be known about the FA Cup and some. Phil, just remind people where they can read about these FA Cup memories and some of the other people that they can read the memories of.
Okay, well, everything is accessible through my Twitter feed on at FA Cup Flat File, and they're all being published on my FA Cup Flat File WordPress.com. We mentioned John Murray and Chris Waddle, but we've also had the likes of Henry Winter, Eileen Barber and Steve Wilson and Mark Pugach from the commentary world, but also several non-league people like Lynn McKechnie from Portland United, Ian Townsend, who runs the Isthmian League social media, Jeremy Jacobs, who's a massive Margate fan, and lots of other people, like even including Dave Anderson, who had provided some fantastic memories of the Northern Irish connection in the FA Cup, and that was fantastic to read as well. And I've got a couple more coming up, which is going to continue on through to the FA Cup final day. Another couple of big names and another, the first former FA Cup winner who will have his memories shared in the next couple of days or so.
Looking forward to reading them all, Phil. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, as ever. And look after yourself.
Okay. Cheers, Tim. Thanks for the call.
So time once again to head on over to the virtual non-league paper towers. And welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. It's senior writer at the non-league paper, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure, and particularly a pleasure when you can help us with a busier week news-wise compared to recent weeks. Football, it's like life. It seems to be finding that new normal. I guess the first off, the announcement from the EFL making it fairly clear that they're keen to support promotion from the National League for the season that was.
Yeah, that's right. The EFL met yesterday to discuss a little bit more about sort of the plans of potentially ending or how they will end their season. And then sort of released a framework, really, as to what would happen should clubs vote to end the season early. There was obviously last week a meeting of clubs who in League Two who pointed out that was their direction of choice, but then it was down to sorting out things like promotion, relegation, playoffs, etc., and how they would go on to do that. So this framework the EFL have released basically says that promotion would happen as usual and the playoffs would be played, and there would also be relegation out of League Two and in their other divisions as well. Because this was one of the main points that came out of last week, was that the League Two clubs said how they wanted promotion but didn't want to send Stevenage, who are currently bottom of the division, down But it seems like this announcement from the EFL rules out that happening, and that the only sort of direction really would be that promotion and relegation happens. And there was a line in there as well, also that said provided they had reassurances that the National League will start season 2020-2021, meaning that Stevenage would have somewhere to play. Of course, that's a bit ambiguous because I'm not sure how you can really sort of guarantee there will be a start, really.
Indeed. I mean, we touched on that last, we touched on that last week, didn't we, about, you know, the future of playing non-league behind closed doors. And it is particularly telling. They say start season 2021, and we don't know whether there may be a season 2021, but it might not start till January, which I think is being discussed up in the non-league echelons of Scotland at the moment. That's where they're looking to head. But it's also interesting, in recent days, I've seen Aldershot chairman and also National League board member Shahid Azim is going on record this week of saying even at the National League, it's not a viable business proposition, really, for non-league clubs to be playing behind closed doors. So you wonder where this will all end up.
Yeah, absolutely. We did speak about that last week, didn't we? But sort of saying how, you know, would it be possible at all to play games behind closed doors at non-league level? And I think we both agreed that it wasn't possible, really. Obviously, clubs rely on the revenue they get through the turnstiles. Obviously, in the Premier League, it's different when clubs have more sponsors, TV money, and sort of greater resources like that, really. Even in the EFL, I don't think it's difficult below the Championship to play behind closed doors, as we've seen many clubs coming out and saying. So, as I said, it's difficult, really, for the National League to give the EFL a sort of assurance that the season will start, to be honest, because at the same time, you know, they could ask League Two and League One, well, how do you know whether you're going to start either? So it's a little bit of a chicken and egg scenario, perhaps. But at least there is sort of some progress on promotion and relegation. And it does look like that announcement today is good news for the promotion hopes of non-league teams.
Yeah, because obviously we're looking at it from a non-league perspective, and you say it is good news, particularly for Barrow just the whole progress of non-league. What we wouldn't want to see is a door shut and then it being very difficult to open again. But obviously, this is the EFL saying, well, you know, if everything's great, then that's the way we like to go. But that then in turn is dependent upon the clubs again voting again and accepting this framework that they've suggested, which in the current climate, if you could all get everybody in a big room and do a vote as they normally would at an AGM or an EGM, then that's fine. But in the current climate, it takes a bit longer. So that stretches the process a bit further. And then again, it's all dependent on the advice that the government are given by the public health bodies and where we're allowed to go, even with the law. So as much as it looks like we're making progress, this is going to be a long runner.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still so much sorting out to do. As you say, obviously, this looks like a step in the right direction of moving things forward. But, you know, you still have to have the vote for football league clubs to decide on how to finish their season. So I should think that League Two clubs will vote in favour of the framework that the EFL has put out. Obviously, there's quite a lot of clubs involved in the promotion. And even clubs like Grimsby, who don't necessarily have something to play for, came out the other week and said that, you know, they'd be voting to send the team down. So I should think that would happen. But then, of course, in the National League, you've then still got to decide as to whether the playoffs will actually happen or not. There was a vote a couple of weeks ago amongst clubs, or rather clubs put their views forward to the National League across both of Step 1 and Step 2. And I think the majority was that the clubs involved in the playoffs wanted to play them,
but obviously the clubs who weren't involved decided just to call it a day. The National League have not made their decision yet on what would happen with the playoffs. Obviously, this latest development sort of helps them in that way because they're waiting to see whether relegation would happen in the EFL. But again, there's still so much sorting out to do. Obviously, then if you then decide for the playoffs, like you say, you still got to decide how they would take place, or, you know, where would they take place, all the protocols to get a match on, as we're sort of seeing in the Premier League at the moment, and as we've seen in Germany recently as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as much as, you know, we'd love to get these games on, we'd love to see some, you know, some playoff action, and maybe that could be streamed, we could all watch that at home. If we couldn't get to the games, we weren't allowed to go, it would be great. But there's something still niggling in me that we're at risk of changing the game again a bit more. We're already seeing, you mentioned the German Bundesliga players and all the medical provisions and all the backup facilities and everything that's going around that. They were talking about the FA Premier League maybe restarting and having similar provisions. You know, we're talking to clubs this week at proper grassroots level that, you know, their cleaning facilities to be able to get football back on is really a hose pipe and a scrubbing brush. You know, we haven't got the same facilities at non-league to be able to get back up with all these other safety nets around us. So do we risk then, if the National League are then going to be pulled along by the EFL, which is great because we want that promotion up into the professional game from non-league, but then does that further detach the National League from the rest of the non-league, which has already had its season voided, and the National League is still hanging on there, and then we create a further division across the non-league game?
Yeah, that's right. I think early on in the discussions regarding what would happen with the non-league season, I think the National League made it quite clear that they sort of separated themselves in a way from the rest because of that link with the EFL. Which you can understand, because I think it is something clearly they're very proud of, that they have that link with the EFL and they get to promote two non-league clubs up into the professional game as such. But, you know, clearly the National League system, as it's called, you know, to see sort of two divisions perhaps move slightly away from that. I can see why people perhaps haven't taken too kindly to that scenario. You made a good point there about football starting up again in terms of clubs getting these matches on. You know, it may be okay in the Premier League and the Championship where these clubs have the resources and staff and finance as well to be able to cope with these extra measures. But I think that will be different in the National League, particularly at step two, should the playoffs be played there. Obviously, it's I think there's always been quite a big gulf really between step two and step one in terms of professional clubs and part-time and also the sort of structure of these clubs as well, many of whom have played in the Football League and sort of knows what it takes to run a professional outfit. So again, that's another thing to consider. Of course, sort of in the background at the moment, FA Council have been discussing extending the National League season in order to allow the playoffs to happen. Basically, the season has a sort of very sort of final cut-off point. Obviously, it usually ends at the end of April and then the playoffs take place. And then there's sort of like a cut-off point at the end of the season as such as to when it must be all finished. You know, perhaps to allow for things like bad weather and circumstances like that. So the National League have applied to extend the season beyond that point, beyond this month. And FA Council will vote on that, and there should be a decision next week as to what will happen with that. So, of course, if that doesn't get passed, then I guess all of this in a way is irrelevant to an extent. But, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with that.
It is almost the ultimate cliffhanger, isn't it? The non-league has always been a soap opera, but it seems to be the soap opera that keeps giving and giving every week, and I'm sure there'll be another slight twist, but whether we'll be at any nearer conclusion this time next week, we'll wait and see. Now, I said it's been a busier news week because there's been a few more managerial changes, particularly of note this week. Maybe a couple of surprises. One, Ebbsfleet United announcing that Kevin Watson will not have his contract renewed beyond this month. And that's despite, we spoke to Kevin a few months ago, and it was such an impressive run since he took over. I think the club were 9 points adrift at the bottom of the table in the National League. Since then, I think something like 17 points from nine games. And they really were the in-form team. When football finished or was halted, I think they were, three wins out of four or similar. They were the in-form team. But clearly not the man that Ebbsfleet see to take them forward.
Yeah, you're spot on there, Tim. I think what did come as a bit of a surprise that he wouldn't be staying on to lead Ebbsfleet in the National League or whatever division they may end up in. As you say, he had turned things around there, really, to an extent recently, winning three of the last four games. And they were the team that you looked at as probably the only one in that bottom four to climb out of it sort of in the last month or so. As you say, sort of a point off safety as well. A bit of a strange one. I think Kevin's disappointed. Matt Badcock spoke to him for a piece for this Sunday's paper. So there's a few more of his thoughts in there. But I think it did come as a surprise looking from the outside. And I think it probably came as a bit of a surprise as well to Kevin Watson seeing that. A bit of a strange one, but I guess that's Ebbsfleet's prerogative to make that decision. Of course, in this sort of time of football, perhaps they didn't want to commit to anything at the moment. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with the club going forward.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because Steve Lovell had come in as director of football there, and it doesn't look like it's a question of resources for sure, because I'm sure Kevin was working with a very reduced budget compared to other clubs in the league there. But as you mentioned, at the moment we still don't know what division they're going to be playing in. If there is relegation out of the National League, then they'd obviously end up back up in the National South. So it's a difficult one to appoint in any normal circumstances, but here we are in a situation where you can't really interview managers, and you can't be sure to give them any certainty as to where they may begin a season or where they could be heading. So it's I suppose he's on a fixed term contract. They don't want to renew it, but it is one of those things that just jars in non-league every now and then.
Yeah, and you probably looked at what he's done, really, and maybe you would hope the club perhaps showed him a bit more loyalty going into whenever next season is or whatever the circumstances are, perhaps. Ebbsfleet have had their difficulties as a club over the last season or so with players not being paid on time and seeming sort of things going on in the background as well, which largely has transferred onto the pitch this season. But as we've said, obviously it looked like Kevin Watson was beginning to turn a corner with the team and leading sort of a late bid to avoid relegation. So, I think he'll have learned a lot from that experience, and I'm sure he'll get another opportunity somewhere in the league.
Yeah, I'm certain that that's someone else will take a punt on him. Well, not so much of a punt. I think he's proven himself there and elsewhere as well. And another club that are now rudderless in terms of managerial and coaching staff, Hemel Hempstead, that in the hunt for a whole new management team, whenever that may be, with Sammy Moore, Jack Mitton and Darren Beale all again not being kept on after a year in the role there. An interesting one, really, in the current climate, because team buildings are difficult anyway at this end of the season, and you're moving into pre-season, but we don't know when that pre-season is going to be. When you're trying to bring in a new manager and then the manager's trying to bring in new thoughts or new processes, even new players, it's going to be very difficult in this new social distancing world.
Yeah, it is. like you say, it's a very difficult time, really, for managers. I don't, in terms of planning for what's ahead, I don't really understand sort of how they can do it. Obviously, I've seen some clubs sort of signing players or players agreeing to sign for clubs when the season comes back. But yeah, I imagine it is difficult. And the Sammy Moore leaving Hemel also came as a bit of a surprise, I suppose. He hadn't been there too long. Obviously, was at Concord, and then went there. They started the season really well, were in playoff contention, but then sort of things just sort of seemed to have unravelled slightly on the pitch. I think they've only won three times since the start of December. So they have had a difficult run. That being said, they're 6 points off the playoffs with a game in hand. So, you know, I'm sure Sammy Moore would have felt that they could have still made a push late on in the season. But ultimately, the club have made that decision and it's time's up there again. As Sammy Moore's another manager who we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years in non-league make a big impression, having been at Leatherhead and then Concord and now Hemel. And once again, I'm sure he'll be back in somewhere again.
Yeah, I'm sure that they all will be involved in football very, very quickly. Hopefully, who knows when football's going to get back underway. That's the thing. So I wasn't overly surprised then to see two other appointments a bit further lower down the pyramid. Fousey's Sardi has been handed the role at Blackford and Langley in the Southern League, where he was a player last term. But I know he's got previous experience having managed lower down at Bournemouth Poppies. And good to see old friend of the social. Simon Lane back in the manager's role as well at Westfield in the Isthmian South Central, a man that has been doing some work with us at Hayes and Yedding just to try and keep his eye and his ear in the game. So that makes more sense when there's a manager that's known to a club that then gets an appointment. But there's going to be a lot of managers that... Normally, if they're out of a job, that they're high profile, they're off. They're at this game, they're at that game. They're just taking in as many games as possible. It's probably the most frustrating time to not be a manager than ever before.
Yeah, I suppose so. At the same time, you probably think if you're a manager in a job somewhere, and perhaps you weren't having sort of the best time. Maybe the season finishing came at quite a good time for you. But I think ultimately, sort of everyone's really in the same boat in the sense that no football's being played anywhere. So, no one's sort of really losing out in that way, I suppose. But obviously, there isn't endless time and years in people's lives. And ultimately, this sort of time is going to waste, really, I suppose, in the careers of managers and players. So I suppose that would be a disappointment.
Mm. Talking of endless time, if people do have endless time, I'm sure they're joining in with various debates on Twitter or Facebook and various other social platforms about the world of non-league. And they're also all talking about the non-league paper, which keeps us sane every Sunday morning when it comes out. What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, it's another packed in issue this Sunday. I spoke to Finn Tapp, who I know you will have heard of Tim as the Love Island winner of the Winter Series recently. I know you're a big fan.
It's been mentioned in my house. I can't. I probably could tell you more about his footballing prowess than his romantic involvement.
Of course, he was at Oxford City before he went on the programme. He obviously ended up winning the show. And I caught up with him basically just sort of seeing how life has been since then, really. He's very keen to get back into football somewhere in non-league. He was at MK Dons as a youngster and then was released and ended up at Oxford, and he was playing regularly until he went on the programme. Still only 20 years old, a centre-back, so he's on the lookout for a new club and a new challenge when football returns. Our new feature in the paper as well, my favourite non-league photo, is back for its second week, where our top non-league snappers sort of describe their favourite photo of what they've taken during their time, which is a nice, interesting new feature, really. And sort of you get to hear a few stories you perhaps didn't know, and a few tales from classic games and classic moments in non-league. And that's back again this weekend. And I also spoke to Plymouth Parkway, who have been the subject of a new documentary recently that's gone out on YouTube. As we know, sport documentaries of The Last Dance and other Netflix programs are quite the range at the moment. And one's been released on their season where they reached the quarterfinals of the Vars and also been positioned to try and win promotion from the Western League, which gives a really good insight into the club and how a non-league club operates, and some really good insight as well to sort of dressing rooms at half-time and full-time and sort of the emotions of football. So but that's also worth a watch.
Oh, well, having got a family link with Plymouth Parkway and them being established, I can thoroughly recommend watching the documentary and also reading the article in Sunday's paper. David, as ever, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for your insight, and we look forward to speaking to you next week and also reading the paper at the weekend.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks.
That's it for this week. Thank you for all of my guests for joining me. Thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Tim Fuel for myself, at Non-League Show for the show, at Dave Anderson 78 and Caroline Barker's at Caroline Barker. You can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there, too, for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, which, who knows when that will return, just like the football, but it will be back, and there's plenty there to keep you entertained if you haven't listened to all the episodes so far. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you. And goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.